for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm, speaking of the often elusive work-family balance. First Lady Michelle Obama once said, no matter what decision you make, you feel like you should be doing more on the other end. Every day, women face difficult decisions about how best to juggle their career and personal lives. Joining me to talk about their new book, Womenomics, and the hidden power of women in today's workplace, here in the studio, Kathy Kay of BBC World News America. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Well, and this is my chance to thank you publicly and personally for sitting in for me when I've been out. Thank you. You do a beautiful job.
I have loved it every single time.
Thank you so much. And joining us from NPR's New York studio, ABC's Claire Shipman. Good morning to you, Claire.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks for having us.
And so glad to have you both. We'll invite our callers to join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Well, Kathy, you're talking about a kind of a revolution, and you're giving it the word womenomics. Explain what you mean.
Womenomics, as we discovered, is the power that women have, but often don't know, in today's economy. We have discovered studies showing that companies that employ more senior women make more money.
When you say senior women, you're talking about in places of authority.
We're talking middle to senior management. Managers, senior vice presidents, executive vice presidents. Their management styles we now recognize as different. Women are different. We are more inclusive. We make longer-term decisions. We are consensualists. We handle meetings differently. We are more risk-averse. It transpires that those qualities we discovered are actually improving companies' profits. Companies that open their boardroom doors to the broadest possible talent and include women in their senior management will get a return in their profits. We think that gives women a huge amount of power to try to carve out the work lives that really suit them.
Claire, what was the inspiration for writing the book?
Well, it's funny, Diane, because the inspiration was really personal. Kathy and I have known each other for quite some time in Washington, and we've both discovered at a certain point that we often had made counterintuitive career decisions, that we felt we'd had successful careers, but at times had turned down the next rung on the ladder, whether it was an anchor job or just something that would be higher profile but more demanding. It would cost us our family life. We both are devoted mothers, but also devoted career women. And it had occurred to us at one point that we thought we had done something fairly remarkable in finding success at work, even if it wasn't the tippy-top job, and having a sane and wonderful family life. And we saw that other women were doing it too. And that was our original inspiration. And then, as Kathy said, we started digging into the research and just found extraordinary information that has really turned it into a trend book as well as a personal book.
You know, here's the first email we've already gotten from Tori, who says, I have one essential question. Why is this topic always directed at women? Why not men, too, if the issue is basically about children, child care, then why not refer to parents rather than women? If the issue is broader than parenting, then again, why is this only about women?
Well, first of all, this is not a parenting book. we have women, we have profiled a dozen or so women in the book who we've spoken to, as well as Claire and I's own stories, and we have women who don't have children. This is a book for people who want more balance in their lives. And the truth is that men, particularly the younger generation of men, are feeling increasingly, as we do, about this subject. They want balance too. They want to sometimes dial back their careers and find more time for their families. But we do feel there is a real difference between the way that men and women approach their careers. For the last 30 years, women have felt often that they had to be just like men. We kind of kept our children hidden at work. We didn't have photographs of them. We snuck out to those school plays. But actually, we do feel differently about our family lives, and we feel differently about our career trajectories. Many men see their careers as that straight corporate ladder, yes, that goes from A to Z.
Right.
I've always seen my career as more of a wave. Sometimes I need to dial up, and sometimes when my kids are younger, I want to dial back down again. I want to stay in the workforce, but I don't necessarily want to keep climbing that ladder. That's a ladder that worked very well, I think, for men for a long time, but it doesn't work for women.
Give me that example out of your own career of what happened.
A few years ago, I was offered a job anchoring the evening news for the BBC, and it was a promotion, and it was a very exciting job, and I'd never anchored in our career, in our broadcasting profession. Being the anchor, of course, is that next step on the ladder. And I thought about the job, and I was excited, but then I realized it would mean that for 5 days a week, I would be getting home at 7:45 in the evening, and that just didn't work for me with small children. That meant I was away for all those key hours every day, and I said to my bosses in London, you know, I'd love to do this job, but I can't do a 5-day week. I can only do a 4-day week.
How much did you think about that before you said that?
In my gut, I knew right from the beginning I couldn't do this 5 days a week. And I already had a reporting job that allowed me a certain amount of flexibility and that I was happy with. So why take that promotion? I called up my boss in London. I said, I've reached a line in the sand. I can do a 4-day week. I can't do a 5-day week. If you want to give the job to somebody else, I totally understand. I'll fill in when you need me. I can help out on vacations, but I can't do 5 days. And London, the bosses in London came back to me and they said, you know what? We really need experienced senior women on the air. If you can only do a 4-day week, we'll take you for 4 days.
Clara Shipman, did that line in the sand come for you as well?
It did. And I think I was feeling increasingly stressed and pressured just by the constant barrage of questions you get, I think, in our industry, Diane, but I also think in any industry. The United States is so career-driven. Everybody talks about work, and I would find that people were constantly saying, what's next? What's your next move? You know, oh, this is a great job, but what do you want to do next? Do you want to be Diane Sawyer? Do you want to be Barbara Walters? Do you want to... And I would feel sort of... I would try to figure out an answer, and I would kind of feel sick at that I didn't have an answer. And it finally occurred to me when I was facing a decision much like Caddy's, where there was a new show being created and I was really being encouraged to consider being the anchor for that show, and it would have been a lot more stress and a move. And I realized I don't want to do it. And that there's value in actually understanding what you want, that there's nothing wrong with saying, this is what I want right now. I don't need to do what everybody else thinks I should do. I need to focus on what's right for me right now. And I didn't know what that would do to my career. And I think it's funny, Barbara Walters was literally asking me this yesterday, did it hurt your career? And I think to some extent, I've had fewer opportunities and I still get twinges when I look at people heading off in different directions. But knowing that I made that choice and that I have a lot of gratification in other ways and that maybe I'll do something else in 10 years has made me very happy.
The book we're talking about is called Womenomics, How to Stop Juggling and Struggling and Finally Start Living and Working the Way You Really Want. The author is Claire Shipman. She's senior national correspondent for ABC News Good Morning America. Caddy Kay is Washington correspondent and anchor for BBC World News America. And if you'd like to join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Claire Shipman, the number of women in the workforce has really reached a critical mass now in this past 30 years. Perhaps this is the right time to be considering this kind of, shall I say, attitude?
I think it is. And I think this is what's interesting, is that we all thought as women that at a certain point we'd have, you know, we'd be controlling a majority of the companies, have a majority of the CEO seats, and that would be the moment when we could finally dictate change. And I think what's actually happened is that our power is in numbers. We may not have those top seats, but because we are so valuable, as Katie said, those studies, the fact that we have more undergraduate and graduate degrees than men do, the fact that we can now control 85% of consumer purchasing, all of these things together mean that companies now understand this isn't window dressing about diversity. They actually value female talent. And in the last 10 years, when there's been that brain drain that you've read about, that you know, in that compelling Harvard study about these highly educated women just reaching that brick wall and quitting, companies are now ready to take this on. They don't want to lose the female talent. And I think that's why you're seeing a new attitude on the part of a lot of enlightened companies and more possibilities for all of us.
Katie, give us some examples of enlightened work companies.
We decided when we were writing the book, Diane, that it was one thing to have Claire and I's story and to talk to women all over America who wanted to do things differently and were doing things differently, but this really wouldn't work unless we spoke to companies as well. Because this has to work. This has to be a business strategy. This has to have company backing if we're going to do this in big numbers. And we found, obviously, lots of small women-owned companies across America, but surprising big companies, Walmart, Best Buy. Best Buy has the most revolutionary work program in America. They call it a results-only work environment. It sounds like a bit like a scientific experiment, but for women, it is nirvana. They have basically decided that they don't care when or where you work. They're just going to measure you by results and performance. You can do it at 3 o'clock in the morning from Starbucks. You can do it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon from home. All they care about is that you reach their targets. What they found was productivity shot up.
Katie Kay, she and Claire Shipman together have written Womenomics. And we're going to open the phones in just a moment after a short break. Stay with us. Here's an interesting email for Claire Shipman and Katie Kay on their book, Womenomics, How to Stop Juggling and Struggling and Finally Start Living and Working the Way You Really Want. It's from Michelle, who says, rather than force women to maximize their flexibility and creativity to have a good life, why not focus on changing the nature of work to be a more reasonable activity for everyone? Haven't we gone too far in demanding too much of all workers, Katie?
I'm nodding my head, Michelle. I think we absolutely have. That, you know, work has got out of control. You know how many... We did research on how many vacation days Americans miss every year, and it's something like 400 million vacation days that Americans could have that they don't take. Take a holiday. You are given this vacation. Change your attitude to work.
But Claire, here's a different perspective. Another email which says, wonderful for these two women at the top of the ladder. How flexible are the workplaces to those in lower level positions, e.g., can secretaries work 4 days a week?
You know, it's funny. Yes, and when we started out to write this book, we thought this can't just be our story because our industry is very unique, as you know, Diane, and a lot of it's a struggle, and our industry is not particularly friendly to any idea of flex time. But it's true that we do have a certain amount of power. I mean, the first thing this works for women across any profession at almost any level. It's certainly meant for professional women, college-educated women. There are certain industries, you know, if you're a waitress or you're working in a factory, you really can't do that from home. You can't operate from home if you're a doctor. I mean, there are certain things that aren't going to work. However, you know, there's a new Harvard study that shows that doctors, in fact, and job sharing has become incredibly popular. But we profile in our book about a dozen women, and an engineer in Detroit, a power plant manager in Georgia, a sales rep in Kansas, people who aren't at the top but who are valuable. The key here is you have to be valuable. And I know of a number of situations, literally, where secretaries have worked out part-time deals and telecommuting deals with their bosses where they spend a couple of days a week at home. The bosses were skeptical at first, but it's worked very well. And our point is that you have to be able to now make a business case to your employer as to why this will work, how you will get it done. Again, Katie mentioned that productivity goes up at Best Buy, or at least I think she did. I mean, that was one of the amazing things that Best Buy has found, is that productivity just shoots up. And I think more and more companies are starting to understand it. If on an individual level you can make a good case to your boss, you're going to have a good chance.
Okay, Katie, let's do it right now. Let's act out how the employee goes to the employer and presents what is the employee thinking and doing to ready herself.
Okay, well, first of all, the employer is probably feeling rather nervous. They feel like they're asking for a favor. Once they understand how valuable women are in the workplace, how expensive we are to replace, it costs 300% of an employee's salary to replace them, you know that your company needs you. That's the first piece of information you have. You have that power to change your life. The second thing you need to do is to carefully lay out a step-by-step negotiating strategy that doesn't start by saying, oh, you know, I need a little bit of flex time. Little Johnny's in school and he needs more of my time. You can say, I can point to examples where productivity has increased when women and men have been allowed to work the way they want. I will carry on meeting my targets. I will communicate with you as my boss every week, if necessary, every day to make sure that I'm on track. I'm not intending to let my productivity slip, but I can do this from 7 o'clock in the evening at home after the children have gone to bed and leave the office at 4. So I'm home for those key hours and I'll pick up again in the evening on email. I'll be on my BlackBerry whenever you need me when there's a crisis. I'll be in touch with you all the time. There are many ways that women can and men can carry on performing their jobs. Do we actually need now, with the technology we have, to be sitting in the cubicle for all of those hours? Probably not.
Suppose the first time you get a flat no.
Then you come back again. Then you revise your case. You go back. We have a whole chapter on the negotiating strategies. 9 tips to nirvana, we call it. The 9 ways that you can lay out your business case in terms of carrying on your performance, communicating with your boss. This is critical. Making sure that you stay in touch with your co-workers so that they know what you're doing. It's also your responsibility to make sure that your performance doesn't collapse. We're not talking about going home and sitting and watching movies and eating Cheerios on the floor. You still have to do your job. But you don't necessarily have to do it sitting at your desk.
You know what's so interesting, Claire Shipman, is that your book has come out when Michelle Obama's husband has come into the presidency, because she is such a work-life balance kind of person.
It's incredible. As we were writing the book and her profile started to grow on the campaign trail, and then she started talking about this, she was holding roundtables. That's in fact how we got some interview time with her in the book on this issue because we were talking to her for Good Morning America after one of these work-life balance roundtables that she holds. And this is a very important issue for her, and it's one she lived. She's really the post-feminist symbol, if you will. This is an extraordinarily powerful, confident woman who was so confident in her abilities that she was able to say, you know, long before the First Lady gig came into view for her, I want to dial back my career because I want more time with my children. In fact, so confident, and I could never imagine doing this, when a babysitter didn't show up for her job interview at the University of Chicago, she just threw Malia in the stroller and took Malia with her to the interview, figuring, well, then they're going to know that work-life balance is important to me. And I think it's
and a she got the job.
Symbol.
And she got the
and
job,
she,
yeah.
She got the job.
You know, the other aspect is, as you all well know, we're in a recession. Is now less of a good time to be pursuing this kind of thing.
You know, while we were writing the book, of course, suddenly the economy started going to pot and we started thinking, my goodness, what impact is this going to have on this? And people started saying to us, but of course, you can only have flexibility in boom times and your company is never going to allow you to change the way you work in this recession. But actually what we found, and we've gone back to the companies we profiled and asked them this, is flexibility possible? And in some cases, it's even more possible now because companies don't have the money to give you bonuses and pay rises anymore, but they don't want to let you go. There is a talent shortage looming in America, and every company knows it. They want to hang on to their valuable talent, and women are valuable talent. So they are looking for creative ways to reward their employees at the moment. Claire has an example of this. Claire, you should tell them about your story about what happened to you during writing the book.
Exactly. I have tried for 7.5 years at ABC to literally work out a formal less than full-time arrangement because after I had my, I mean, I just had no idea what would hit me having kids, and I thought I'd like to have a little more time. And they just were not keen to do it on any sort of official basis, although I did carve out flexibility unofficially. But as a lot of women who go through this will say, you know, you just constantly feel guilty if you're not doing something officially. And it was only last fall, in the middle of all of this financial trouble, that they suddenly said, you know what, this could work for us, and that we're willing to be more creative now. And I think you see that across the board. I was interviewing Sara Lee's CEO, Brenda Barnes, last week for a profile we were doing on Good Morning America this week on Womenomics. And she said, the companies cannot afford not to be creative now. Mm. They need to be looking at every single way they can to increase productivity, and this is it, and to save some money and to reward good talent.
Here's an email from Andy, who says, once again, I think your subject is a little sexist. More and more single fathers have the issues with as much or more stigma. I've been accused of not being productive or a team player because I had to leave to pick up my son.
You know what I would say to Andy is that this is really changing. I think that women started pushing this earlier on because of biology, because we had children, we didn't know what impact it was going to have on us, and when we had children, we felt the need to try to have more time at home. But we are only the canaries in the coal mine. There are men all across America, particularly younger men, but also men like you, Andy, who are single fathers, who are saying, I want that balance too. And what we're saying is, this is not just a recipe for women. This is a recipe for anyone who wants more balance in their lives. Women may be leading the way, but this is for men too. It can change their lives as well.
I think that's a very important point because when you look at the surveys, the men of our generation, say 40s and up, they do increasingly want more flexibility, but they don't view it as critical as the women do. And that's why women, Diane, are driving this revolution, but it will benefit everybody. And the younger generations, Gen Y especially, the men's attitudes are so similar to the women's attitudes. This is going to be something that will benefit everybody. It's just that we're the ones who are demanding it more right now.
All right. We've got lots of callers. Let's open the phones. 800-433-8850. Claire, you ought to see Caddy in here. She is just so excited, and she's just so revved up. So let's go first to Kathy in Guilford, Connecticut. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Surely.
I'm just delighted to hear these two wonderful women talking. I admire both of them so much, and I can't wait to get this book. I'm also a life coach, and as a life coach, we work with our clients in achieving work-life balance, so it's really very exciting to me. I also enjoy what they have to say about the economy and creativity and flexibility at this time. Now is a better time than ever. And the other thing I just wanted to mention is there's another wonderful book by Life Coach called The Art of Extreme Self-Care by Cheryl Richardson. And she focuses also on one chapter particularly called The Absolute No List, which is so mm-hmm. empowering for individuals, men and women.
And you've got a chapter on the strategic no, Kathy.
There are times we think in your career where sometimes you have to say yes. But for women in particular who find saying no so difficult, there are a lot of times where you have to say no as well. And, you know, women, we're micromanagers. We are perfectionists. We feel we have to take everything on. And there are times, I think, when we could learn a few savvy tricks that men have known about how to work. Men have developed somehow a second sense for choosing the projects that their bosses really like. And we've spoken to women managers who have had men working under them who are saying, you know, the young women I have working for me feel they have to say yes to everything. They take on every little duty. They make sure that everything, dot every I and cross every T, and sometimes they could let some of that stuff go and choose the projects that really matter to their bosses. It's a way of saving you time, but to do it, you've got to say no to some things too.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And to Cincinnati, Ohio, Sarah, you're on the air.
Hello, Diane. Thank you so much. I love your show.
I'm so glad. Sarah, thank you.
I'm calling because someone had emailed in, do you have to be at the top of the ladder to do this? And I was editor of two community newspapers and became pregnant and knew I wanted to stay home with my child. And so I created a 6-page proposal and gave it to our publisher. And she looked it over and talked with her colleagues, and they found a need within the company, which was to promote our websites that could be part-time and done mostly through telecommuting and from home. And I just wanted to say that if you take the reins and make a case that the company would benefit from this, as your guest said, then you've got some pretty good success.
Clara Shipman, that sounds like a wonderful recipe for success.
It does, and I'm so thrilled to hear that from somebody from my home state of Ohio, so thank you for calling in. It is, and I think, Diane, this is what we're trying to tell women. Is it's another thing many women don't do is speak up. You've got to ask, and what we're trying to do with all of that information about our power is literally empower women to help all of us to understand. Your bosses aren't going to come in and say, hey, did you know how, you know, valuable women are in the marketplace? I mean, this is great information to have because it just gives us some perspective so that when we do go in to make that case, we feel so much better about it and we're likely to get what we want. But if you don't ask, you won't get it.
All right. To Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Rochelle.
Good morning, Diane. I have been listening just literally driving in the car, shaking with glee and also with fury. I am a former school teacher. I'm also the daughter of two school teachers. And I was born in the late 60s, so I was that whole free to be you and me generation. Don't be a stewardess, be the pilot, don't be a nurse, be the doctor. But I did follow my parents into the teaching profession, and I absolutely loved it for the years that I was childless, and I used my mother energy toward those children who needed it at the time and whatnot. And I waited until I was much later, older in life, to have my child. She's a 16-month-old, and I'll be 40 next month. But the one thing that I noticed over the course of the years, the decade or so that I was a teacher and watching my mother discuss coworkers in her elementary school as well, it just seems like, by and large, teachers seem to sacrifice their own children, their own families' lives, in lieu of mothering, caring for other people's children, because, you know, that's part of the job description. And quite frankly, the more women over the course of the years that I was a teacher, et cetera, the more women that were put into principal positions, the less flexible, the less understanding, the more demanding that you return 6 weeks to the day after maternity leave. I mean, I was actually told this to my face. It amazes me that in a profession where we women are, not to be rude to other teachers listening, but dime a dozen, there is another teacher waiting in line, fresher, younger, newer, to take your place. Don't let the door hit you in the back.
She is expressing a tough situation, Caddy.
A very tough situation, although I would say it's getting a little easier. My mother was a teacher too, and when she had her second child, this was back in England, in the 50s, she was told that she had 10 days leave. And if she didn't go back to work after 10 days, she wouldn't have a job anymore. So I think that things have certainly come a long way since then, and they are changing across the board because women are demanding and men are demanding that they need change.
Caddy Kay and Claire Shipman, together, they have written Womenomics, How to Stop Juggling and Struggling and Finally Start Living and Working the Way You Really Want.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe, on the web at germany.info. By Global Nutritional Research, maker of Clotamin, a multivitamin designed for people on blood thinners, at clotamin.com. And from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Take these chains from my heart and set me free.
John Doe, co-founder of the great punk band X, recently released a CD of classic country songs. On the Labor Day edition of Fresh Air, John Doe performs some of those songs in our studio. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Set me free. Take these tears from my eyes and let me see. Just a spark of the love that you...
And if you've just joined us, two female journalists, certainly at the top of their game, Caddy Kay. She's Washington correspondent and anchor for BBC World News America. Claire Shipman is senior national correspondent for ABC News. Good morning, America. And together, they've written a book titled Womenomics, talking about the hidden power of women in today's workplace. We're going to go back to the phones in a moment, but here's an email from Roman who says, doesn't this suggestion have an effect on benefit packages, health insurance, 401k contributions, etc., Caddy?
It does if you decide to take formally, for example, a four-day week. Now, actually, what's happening all across America is that people are working alternative schedules in so many different ways. Sometimes they're actually doing a full-time job, but just squeezing it into 4 days. And lots of companies are letting you do that now. But when you do decide to actually take a formal pay cut, then yes, it does affect benefits. We spoke to one woman for the book, Jennifer Dickey. She's a mechanical engineer for a firm of architects in Detroit. And Jennifer, when she had her second child, decided that she needed just a little bit of extra time off. She was working a 45-hour week. She just couldn't quite do those 45-hour weeks with the small children. So she went to her company and they were very understanding. They said, yes, if you want to cut down to a 40-hour week, you can do that, but we'll give you a pay cut and you will lose that proportion of your benefits as well. She and her husband are not very wealthy. She went back to her husband and said, listen, you know, I really need those few extra hours. I'm just struggling too much. That dashing to daycare closing, it's driving me crazy. I need a little bit of time where I can get our lives sorted out at home as well. And between the two of them, they decided it was worth it to take the pay cut. And Jennifer said, I can do with the pay cut, that's fine, but I am struggling with the healthcare benefit cuts, the vacation cuts, all of the other benefit cuts, the 401k cut that is going with it. She wishes she didn't have that. But she's made the trade-off, and so, and there are trade-offs to be made.
Absolutely.
And every single person has to measure the financial trade-off, the career trade-off, and even sometimes the ego trade-off that comes with making these decisions. But I think the point is the decisions are out there, the choices are out there, and each person can make their own now.
Now to Jessica, who's in Swartz Creek, Michigan. Good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you very much. And I must say that I admire all three of you women greatly.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
You're very welcome. What I wanted to say, I got so excited. I missed about the first 10 minutes. And I got so excited because I'm a Mary Kay consultant. And everything that you were talking about made me think about, number one, why Mary Kay started the company back in 1963. Because so often when she did direct sales before, she would not be promoted because they would say, oh, Mary Kay, you're just thinking like a woman. And she understood the dynamic of that, and she understood the dynamic of the differences between how men and women think, and that's why for so long her son had been the president and ran the company as the president of the company. She was the chairman of the board, but it was her company, and all of our women, well, you know, it's majority women, but there are men in the company as well. But the point is that I'm getting at is I heard the comment about how many women in successful companies there are that have women in middle and upper management, and that's what we have. And, you know, we've been the number one best-selling brand of skincare and color cosmetics for over 14 years now, and there's a reason for that. And part of the reason I became a consultant was for the flexibility for me when I was pregnant with my first child.
Hmm.
And it's giving me all the different rewards that you've talked about already. And just listening to this, it's made me even more excited and reaffirmed why I do what I do.
I'm so glad for that. But I want to pick up on something that Jessica said, Claire. We've got an email from Joyce in Rochester who said, what differences, if any, did the writers find when the boss is or was a woman?
Well, it's interesting because I wanted to pick up on that, too, because we didn't set out to do this, Diane, but I think the other point we end up making in this book is that it is okay, finally, to say men and women are different. And we're different in what we want often and the connections we want, that what we want to do with our time, i.e., which is why especially women of our generation are pushing for more time for families than men are, and we think that's okay to say, but also that women are different as managers. Our skills are different. Our styles are different. And for 30 years, as Kati said, we've had to pretend we were just like men because the way women managed, if they managed naturally, was often seen as, oh, well, that's soft. Those are soft skills. Guess what? In a 21st century workforce, there are all sorts of studies that show that it's the right brain thinking, the female thinking, that way of managing that pays off. It's a way of collaborating, of pulling people up with you, of mentoring, of looking for ways to conciliate instead of compete. And most importantly, there's been an enormous amount of press in the last 3 or 4 months since the recession hit about our the fact that women do not take risk as quickly as men. Mm. There was a great article by Nick Kristof that suggested if Lehman Brothers, metaphorically, had a few more sisters at the top, we literally would not be in this mess.
That's an interesting point.
It is true. And there are studies that show this. We're not making it up. They have studied the differences. They're there. We're not saying women are better. We're saying a diverse group of voices for any company is what equals success.
All right. Here's an email from David, who says, in my experience, more often than not, managers base their responses on fear of losing control over the workplace. They seem to prefer having employees in sight, even if they're not doing anything, rather than having them out of sight and wondering if they're working. What's the strategy for changing that mindset, Caddy?
It is absolutely a question of fear. And we have spoken to senior managers in some of the companies that we profile who have confessed to us, you know what, I used to think I had to have everybody right in my eye line. When you change the whole structure and you start saying to people, I'm going to value you based on your performance and your results, not on how many hours you're sitting at your desk, then actually it's quite hard for employees to start shirking, because people can be sitting at their desk and cruising the internet for half an hour, or emailing with their mum, or, you know, Skyping with their kids, but they're not actually necessarily performing. And the companies that have changed the structure of work and started to put performance over the clock have found that the productivity both shoots up, and the employees are so much more happy and so much more committed because they don't have to sneak around or sit in the office for those extra hours. We've all done it, been there waiting for our boss to leave and sitting there. Our jobs are done, our tasks are fulfilled, we've performed perfectly, but we sit there because the boss hasn't left yet. And you just, that is such a waste of everybody's time and effort and energy, and the economy can't afford that kind of waste anymore.
All right. And you know, Diane, I just want to jump in because we have some great tips for dealing with just the sort of Neanderthal managers that the caller was talking about. Literally ways to make your case, even in a very subtle fashion, to suggest saying things like, you know, I'm going to start working on this project from home at 6 a.m. this morning, and then suddenly rush into the office and hand them a completed document and say, wow, I was so much more effective. And literally ways you can start to drop little hints, pepper your conversation, and get to the point where it seems like a good idea to give this whole thing a try, to bring them around.
I like your style, Claire. let's go now to Ralph in Wichita, Kansas. Hi there, Ralph. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Diane. I appreciate you taking my call.
Surely.
Hey, you ladies are right on in regards to people being overworked. And I'm a child of the 50s. I was born in the early 50s, and I work in a major aircraft company, probably the major aircraft company in Wichita. Love what I do. Spent almost 30 years doing it. And I work with a lot of women especially, and you're absolutely right. The talents of these women are being appreciated. But unfortunately, a lot of us are, you know, at that point in time where we're 25 or 30 years into our career, in our 50s, approaching our 60s, and we're tired. And we've laid off all the young people 3 years ago, so we have nobody to replace us, so we're doing the work they were doing. And the point is that we're being laden down with a lot of extra work, men and women especially. And I don't think that's going to change for two reasons. I think the reason is the economy is bad right now, and we're all afraid of losing our jobs or losing that opportunity, you know, to continue working for whatever period we want. The other thing is that our company character is not really changing. I mean, people are still expendable. There's a lot of educated people out there that are willing to take our jobs pretty quickly.
I think you've raised some really good points. The fear about the economy, the company's attitudes that people are expendable. What do you say, Claire?
You know, it's true. And I think the fact that there can almost be in our sort of 24-hour work world these days an endless expectation of what employees should be doing and what they should be accomplishing. And I think it is absolutely critical in the face of that, which is happening everywhere in every industry, to be sure that you are constantly communicating with your supervisor, your boss, about what your the expectations are, what you are doing, what you have completed, so that in ways that are subtle and not so subtle, and we get into this in the book, you're making the case that, yes, I can take that on, and I'll be getting it to you next month. And do you want me to do that after I finish X, Y, Z, P, D, Q, or do you, you know, you can't, and again, I know women do this too, but I'm sure men do it all the time as well, feel that you need to say yes immediately to everything. And if you're being overburdened, I think you've got to be willing to be on top of managing expectations and results and a clear communication with your supervisors. And I also think that it may be that right now it feels to you that there are a million educated people ready to take your place, but I am just not sure that the statistics bear that out. I mean, that we really, you know, when you look at Gen Y is just a fraction of the size of the boomers. I mean, companies everywhere are really worried about how they're going to replace this generation with that one.
That's exactly what I was going to say to Ralph, is that it may feel at the moment like there are not, you know, that there's a ton of talented young people waiting to take your job, and so you've got to work around the clock to keep it. But actually, your company, although they're worried at the moment, they are having to make their decisions based not on just 6 months, but on 6 years, on 16 years. And the demographics point to a real talent and labor shortage, and companies are going to have to address that.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. You know, this whole issue of women and life experience and what they bring to the position has come up in regard to President Obama's nominee to the Supreme Court, Katie. What's your reaction?
Well, isn't it remarkable, Diane, that it's finally okay to say that women and men are different, and that actually Judge Sotomayor may bring experiences to the bench because she's a woman that are different and valuable, and that we need that diversity. Just after she was nominated, I actually went up to Maryland to interview a woman judge to ask her whether she felt that being a woman had changed her the way that she actually administered the law. And she said, you know what, if you'd asked me that 10 years ago, I would have denied it outright. But now I'm prepared to say, yes, I am a woman and I have done things and taken decisions and brought a perspective to my job that is different from my male colleagues. And I think America and the administration of justice has benefited from it, because as Claire says, it's not just that we only want women. We don't at all. But it's the balance that we need.
But there's a mindset, is there not, Claire, that says, well, of course, you're just a human being. You're all the same. And you've got to view justice in precisely the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a political mindset. And I wonder when we will get over that, because I know
there's this push to
think that this is because we're a quote unquote post-racial society or post-gender society, whatever we are now in this Obama era, that means nobody's different. I think quite the opposite. I think, again, all of the research we've uncovered is pointing to saying, we are different. Let's take advantages of those differences. And if a group of white men can't even agree on how the Constitution should be interpreted and they have different views of that, then why would it be odd to think that throwing women, different people into the mix, that everybody's going to view things differently and in part based on life experiences? I just don't understand.
All right. Go ahead, Katie.
When we translate this, we've been talking about it in terms of the Supreme Court, but when we translate this into the business world, I don't know about you, Diane, but I look around at the headlines recently, and it doesn't seem to me that men have done such a fabulous job of running Wall Street and some of our major corporations by themselves recently. I think a few more women up there could have changed that dynamic, too.
Well, and the question becomes, where do we go from here? Do you see massive numbers of women reading your book, going to their bosses, and saying, look, there are some really good reasons why I feel I could be more productive, could be more helpful to the job I'm in if I work at home.
I really hope so. I mean, I hope that we have laid out business data, and some of this book is a business trend book, but I really hope that that doesn't really mean very much if you don't take those numbers and translate it into your own lives. What women are increasingly saying, and we have the studies to show it, is that they will trade some status and some money for a little bit more time. What do professional women really need in their days? They need a couple more hours to run the rest of their lives. And they can take this data and go to their bosses and say, give us that little bit more time.
Go ahead, Claire.
And also in the big picture, Diane, what we hope is that they do that, but that everybody understands, talented women understand, you don't have to quit, that they can maintain a connection in the workforce. They can be part of it. They might not be CEO, you know, on a 20-year rise, but they might turn out to be like Brenda Barnes and reach the top job, you know, on a 30-year rise.
Claire Shipman, senior national correspondent for ABC News. Good morning, America. Kathy Kay, Washington correspondent, anchor for BBC World News America. Their new book is titled Womenomics. Congratulations to you both.
Thanks so much,
Thank
Diane.
You.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org.